you can write about really cool wildlife or things that are happening and just provide like a glimpse into a different world for a kid. You have no idea like what that might spark and where that might lead them.
Fact checkers take note, it's time for another You May Contribute a Verse. Team Versi is Brenna Jenneret, author and outdoors mom, podcast wizard John Seymour, and me, Josh Munkin, science communicator and dad and author who truly wishes he had a grasp of how to approach nonfiction a tenth as well as today's guest. Jessica Stremmer needs to slow down because this episode is already way out of date. We start by discussing her fourth book that she can't talk about yet, even though she does talk about it now. But astute readers and listeners who know Jessica may already know that not only is she talking about that fourth book, but she's already announced books 5 and 6 releasing in 2025. And we only recorded this chat in October. She has been busy. For real though, check out Jessica's awesome and engaging picture books out now. Great Carrier Reef was released last year, and as of airing, her new book Lights Out just released last week. Her nonfiction middle grade titled Fire Escape releases in just a couple of months. Here, without further ado, is Jessica Stremmer's verse.
So we've talked to a couple of authors, like Tara Lazar, for instance. Her kids don't appreciate her books at all. They do not think she is, like, you know, very good at what she does. Pat Zelo Miller's kids, really sweet, like, always, like, shouting out their mom. Apparently one of them talks about her mom on dates in order to gain sort of, like, social collateral. So, like, wow. It could go either way. Yeah. So what do your kids think about your writing?
Okay, so let's see. They're in fifth grade and seventh grade. And so the picture books, I think in the beginning they got a little tired. I'm like, hey, do you want to read this? And they'd be like, no, mom. You know, like, we've read your stuff. And so there was one that I sold, and I was showing them the mock-up, you know, the sketches or whatever, and nobody had read it yet. My husband, my kids, it was, you know, I just kind of got, I didn't share it with them anymore. And so all of a sudden they were like, hey, this is actually pretty good. Like, thank you, child.
Right. Yeah, I guess you know what you're doing. I guess that's a thing. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think they're going to be more into the middle grade when that one comes out, because that's kind of what they're both reading right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exciting. I mean, you've got stuff like sort of in the pipeline. Like, things are happening.
Yes.
Yeah, 6. She's holding up 6 for anyone who can't see. Which is all about.
For everybody who can't see.
Yeah. I was hoping number 4 would have been announced. I kept watching the emails this week. So hopefully soon we can publicly talk about number 4.
Yeah, right. I feel like I know about number 4 because I got to have a dinner with Jess before we left, Josh, which is everything we have in common.
And you didn't record it.
Yeah, so me, Jess. No, I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. I didn't bring my setup. But yeah, Katie McKinney and Kate, and I forget how to say her last name. It's going to escape me. Do you know Jess? Yeah, but also Kate, who, yeah, right, she's on Discord. She's rep by Joyce Sweeney. She writes a bunch of graphic novels. She's awesome. So anyways, we did live in Wisconsin. We met for dinner, which was really fun.
And then you bounced.
Right. Yes. And then I left. So now I'm not there. Yeah.
I might get to see one of the Katies soon this weekend. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, awesome. For a writing related thing? Or
no, we're heading to Madison for soccer. And so I messaged her like, is this close? Oh. So we'll see if it works out.
Oh, cool. Yeah, very cool. I hope you guys get to meet up again. Yeah.
Since this will air in the future, it's nice that you were able to see each other in the past, and I'm glad it went so well.
Yes, it's very cool to meet people in person, like, for real, because I feel like that happens so rarely now because everything is done online. Like, I've never even met Josh in person. Like, I mean, we spend a lot of time together, but I've never actually, like, seen his face.
Yeah, I'm AI. Like,
yeah.
Close.
Just so you know.
And being able to talk to people in the kidlit world because nobody else gets it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. Because it's, I mean, as much as, like, I tell my husband about it and I explain, and like, he's, you know, he's very supportive and will listen to any number of rants or whatever, like, and, you know, wants to share in good news and stuff. It's not the same, because he'll be like, well, what if you do blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, well, I'm like, that's just not how it works. Like, it's like, publishing is like kind of ridiculous. Like, it doesn't work like any other job or industry that I know of. So like, I love you for trying, but that's not, that won't work. So.
Or I'll talk about my editors and he's like, which one is this? Which book? You know, is that one out there? Have I seen it? Has it? Yeah. I'm like, okay.
That's such a nice humble brag. you have so many irons in the fire that he's getting your editors confused.
Totally. I'm confused. Which editor are we talking about? Yeah. Which
I'm very lucky. Yeah. I'm very lucky. Yeah.
Well, Jess, let's talk about how it got started. So, like, let's back up a little bit. Like, how did you, because you are, I mean, not only are you super prolific and you have a bunch of stuff coming, but, like, it feels like you're one of those authors who has done a really good job of finding your niche and what you're really good at, and you have kept going and things keep coming, which is, like, awesome. I feel like that's what everybody wants, you know? So, like, how did you do it? How did you get there?
Yeah. I mean, I would like to say I was one of those people that, you know, always had my face in a book and, you know, had been writing since I was little, but that was not the case. Even my mom is like, when did you really start writing? I'm like, I don't know. So I wrote off and on, you know, through, I guess, life. And then it was probably during COVID, you know, I had written a couple of manuscripts, like, and I even queried. I made all the mistakes that people do, you know, querying way too early. And, but it was during COVID, you know, that I had some downtime and really started, joining SCBWI and kind of figuring out this whole writing thing. And then, when I lived in California, it ended up that Kate Allen Fox lived 10 minutes from me. And so we met, you know, and kind of became critique partners. And she kind of gave me the boost, the confidence to kind of to go for it. And I kind of figured out my voice. I don't know how you really figure that out, but all of a sudden it kind of just clicked, like, you know, what kind of stories I wanted to write about. And so then I got pretty lucky with querying, and I don't think I had to wait too terribly long to get an agent. And we went out on submission in February of 21, I think. And my husband was getting ready to deploy. And so I was like, I need to stay busy. I can't think about him leaving. And, you know, he's kind of checked out because he's focusing on the mission. And so I was like, I'm just going to keep writing. And my youngest had turned on a documentary about reefing shifts. She was asking, you know, can I watch more TV? And I said, only if it's educational. I'm such a mean mom. And so she turned on this show about reefing ships, and they had the Oriskany. And I'm like, man, you know, here I am, a military spouse. He's getting ready to leave. He's, you know, deployed on aircraft carriers. That deployment was not going to be on an aircraft carrier, but he had before. And I just thought the entire concept was so cool. And so I dove into, you know, researching it, wrote the story, and there was a SCBWI event where I had a critique with an editor, and she came back to me and she said, there's some things you could change, but really this is ready to go on submission. Like, your editor, whoever acquires this, is going to be the one to kind of, help you tweak it and get it across the finish line. So I messaged my agent and I said, you know, we'd already had one out on submission, and she usually doesn't do two at a time. And so, I begged her, I said, please, you know, she said it's ready. Can we do it? And at the same time, who would become my editor had put out a tweet, you know, saying that she was looking for something that kind of aligned with what I had just written. And so the stars kind of aligned, and wow, we sent it off. I know it was timing. It was not at all in my control. Because I had only written the manuscript, you know, a couple months earlier. So then it happened that my agent was visiting San Diego. She, you know, she had another couple clients in the area. And so we went out and we were at the zoo that day and we were talking. And, I said, you know, do you think we'll hear back? And I don't know, within minutes, like, she got an email from the editor that was, yeah, we're sitting down to lunch. And she goes, you just got to revise and resubmit. And I was like, what? Oh my gosh, what do I do? You know, I'm like totally just in shell shock of like, what happens now? And she said, well, first I'm going to finish my vacation. Wow. And then I will, you know, we'll look at the, yeah, yes. I said, okay, that's okay. She said, you know, just let me look at the email. Let's look at the manuscript and then I'll kind of help guide you to figure out how to go forward with it. So yeah, I mean, made the changes, made the suggested changes, and I think, I can't remember if it sold in June or July. I mean, it was like only within like 5 months of writing that manuscript that it sold. It was insane.
Jess, what in the world? So first of all, I have to say, I feel like I can speak on behalf of Brenna in saying what fantastic compartmentalization for Natasha to not be able to be like, I'm going to shove my fries to the side and we're going to sit here and just and take a look at this R&R while we're face to face. Good job being responsible with your time. That's amazing. Was, I mean, the pace.
It was wild. It was wild. And so, and I mean, I love her, my editor. She's phenomenal. And she really gets my writing, gets my voice, gets the style of stories that I like to tell. So yeah, I don't know. I was very fortunate, and it's been great building that relationship with her. So my third book is a middle grade nonfiction, The Fire Escape, and that is also with her in Holiday House. They have a Books for Better Earth collection, which is really based on books that help kind of bring hope and awareness. You know, there's so much negativity with the environment and all that kind of stuff, and so their books, you know, really help show kids success stories. And so, Brenna, when you talked about finding my niche, I love nature. I love science. I love writing about all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's so many cool things for kids to discover in the world. And, you know, they might not be able to leave their city. You know, there's kids that don't get to go to national parks or get to take vacations. And it's like, man, the more we can write about these really cool things, and they don't have to be really big concepts either. Like, you can write about really cool wildlife or things that are happening and just provide like a glimpse into a different world for a kid. You have no idea like what that might spark and where that might lead them.
Yeah, I mean, kids are, I mean, yeah, but like my kid can get lost in just like rock collection for hours, you know, like who knows what is like going on in his brain. Or sticks are equally as like imaginative and just like creative, you know, like the sticks can be any number of things. And it's amazing like how much time can just like evaporate when he's like in that sort of like flow state. And so yeah, trying to capture that in a book and then like encourage that kind of creativity and just like fascination is, I mean, yeah, that's like every author's dream, right? And being able to do it with a small subject or a big subject, I feel like equally, both are equally as difficult.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm curious. I want to go back before we lose the thread of this, because you sped kind of through the it all happened so fast kind of mm-hmm. process of querying and your husband's deployment and writing and selling and all that. And I'm curious, even for people with really robust writing backgrounds, I mean, it still can take quite a long time for people to break in. And for you, I'm wondering, aside from luck and aside from happenstance and aside from Kate Allen Fox, who, you know, lots of folks would credit, I mean, what do you credit it to? I mean, did you have like a preponderance of time to sit down and focus and study and write and refine and throw out a bunch of stuff that wasn't working? Did you utilize SCBWI to a pretty significant extent? How did that look for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I first started querying, again, it was like, you kind of make the mistakes and you set up stuff that isn't ready. You're not really aware of what's good and what's not. And so I pulled back from querying, and because I kind of realized, oh, I needed a package and I needed, you know, three or four polished manuscripts. And I don't know, I kind of dove in, and Kate will tell you, I have so many ideas all the time, so many things that I want to write about. And I kind of let it be known to my family, you know, like, this is what I'm excited and I'm passionate about and I'm going for it. And, you know, if mom decides to just go off on a tangent and, you know, hold on, I got to write something down, you know, or I need to lock myself in the room for an hour and write, you know, just ask them to kind of give me that space to be able to do so. And so I was lucky to kind of have that support, and it did take time. I mean, I know it happened very quickly, but, you know, if I say I started writing in the beginning of 2020 and I got agents at the beginning of 2021, it's only a year. You know, I do realize that's very quick, but I was writing and practicing my craft. And I watched every SCBWI, you know, webinar that there was, any, I think I was like Kidlet 411, like any free, anything that would pop up, anything that I could watch to kind of get my hands on the craft of writing, I did. You know, I took advantage of the library delivery and just, you know, checking out books. We had the system where they, if your library doesn't have it, they can get them from pretty much anywhere in the state, which was really cool. So I was, you know, requesting a ton of books and reading, and it did take time, you know, to get my package polished enough to where I felt confident querying again. And I had rejections, you know, I did. And it's always, you know, that's always hard to handle. But also I see now different visions, you know, what the people say about, you know, agents and editors having visions, because I've had stories that have gotten passed on by editors and then, you know, it's gotten picked up elsewhere. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, I really kind of committed and made it a priority, and I don't know, I got, again, luck, I don't know.
It just happened.
I don't know, it just,
yeah, right.
But I did put time into the craft, you know, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I did.
Yeah, for
button
sure.
Chair.
But and let me ask you this, because so as somebody who writes, I have a couple of nonfiction pieces, but they're really specific to like things that I think are really interesting, which not to say that like, you know, nonfiction books are not interesting. It's just that I write mostly fiction and like I like a lot of silly, like weird, like quirky stuff, which that doesn't generally happen in the nonfiction world, right? So when those two do collide, then I'm like, oh my gosh, like I gotta write about that, which is why I've got like one or two, right? But so I guess my question is, because so this is the other side of the coin, I kind of hate research. Like I sort of just like loathe it. So my husband is amazing at it and I'm really good at like big picture and I bring all the enthusiasm. So like that's a good team. So like we work really well together in that way. But do you like research? It feels like you do, because these are books that you're like really good at writing, right? And I feel like when you do the research, that they it helps to sort of write itself, like it, the story is there, right? You do the research and then you put it together, and it, not to say that you didn't, you know, do other things, but the research is like cornerstone.
Yeah. Oh gosh, there's a lot of layers to that question. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. I tend
no,
to
it's
ramble.
Good. No, it's good. And I do enjoy the research. I hit a point when, so kind of what I'll do is, if I like, a lot of times I'll think of titles first, right? Book four was a title first, and book four was a tremendous flop in my mind. I tried writing it, you know, over and over and over again, and it was a title first. Anyways, so title first, and I'll kind of research and look and see if there's any other books out there about that topic. Because with nonfiction, once it's done, you really have to put a unique spin on it, because, again, you have to tell editors why yours is different and why you also need a book about that on the market. So I'll research and see what's out there. And then I'll kind of, I'll spend some time researching whatever it is that, like I had a book about, an idea about ants that I wanted to write about. And I had this great title. I kind of knew what I wanted to write about, but the more I researched, I couldn't find the thread. I couldn't find the way in the way that I wanted. And so I gave up. I walked away from it, and that's okay. You know, that happens with stuff. I learned some cool stuff along the way, but it'll never become a book, and that's okay. So I tend to try, and the other thing is with research is you can go down those rabbit holes, you can go off on those tangents. And so, you know, I try to stay focused and just write down whatever it was that I thought would be cool about something else. And eventually I get to the point, though, where I'm like, okay, like, I just want to write it. Yeah, I just want to write it. You know, no more research. I just want to write it. So then I'll go back through all my notes and I'll kind of start highlighting and pulling out, like, what the themes or what the topics or what the major plot points, I guess, would be, you know, in it. I write by longhand a lot. I don't do a lot on the computer at first. I like to jot it all down in notes, and I'll have different outlines and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I guess I do like research, but to a certain point, and I get tired of it. But I also realize, yeah, you know, when it's okay to walk away, when an idea is just, it's not there, and that's okay.
I think when you said, you know, when you can go down a rabbit hole, that for me, I think, is the thing that turns me off from research, because I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like so overwhelming, like where do I stop? And then at some point, like I feel like I come from a place of mostly just wanting to write. And so the research like takes me away from writing. And I think that's the other part of it. Like it's not that I don't want to learn about this stuff. I just like don't want to spend the time away from the actual manuscript. Cause I'm like, I've got this idea and I just like want to put it down, but I can't because you know, I have to like have facts and stuff. If it's not fiction, like I can't just make it up.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing too, is that like, you have to be able to prove, like if you're saying it's nonfiction, you have to be able to prove that it's true. Right. And so yeah. I try to back up whatever I'm finding. If I find a cool fact, I try to keep looking to make sure I can find that fact in a couple other places so that if anybody comes back and says, you know, well, where did you find this? And I can say, oh, here, 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 you know, like it wasn't just one person making it up. And I'll use scientific journals a lot, more than just websites. There's some websites, you know, like that are more credible than others, but anybody can put together a website. So I always try to find this real source of the information. For my middle grade book, Fire Escape, I was able to do interviews, which that was the first time doing that, which was pretty cool because then you're really getting, you know, more inside knowledge and being able to use like their stories and that kind of stuff in the book. So yeah, I try to make sure that it's the sources are there deep enough that I can back it up so I never get called out on being unfactual. I don't know. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. So it is like you said, I get impatient though. Like that's why I'm like, okay, I've gotten what I wanted to, you know, I found the facts that I want to include in the book. I can back it up. Time to write, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Totally. And for a middle grade, do you sub those on proposal then because it's so long? Like, do you have a couple of chapters and then the proposal?
Yeah, so the way that this one worked out, so again, this was with my editor at Holiday House, and we had pitched her a couple of my other ideas, and, you know, they didn't really hit her, which is okay. Again, you know, they have to love the book, right, in order to say yes, because they have to champion it. And I had told my agent, I said, well, I have this idea for this book about wildfires, and she said, well, has anything been done like that? And I said, no. And she said, well, you know, kind of explore the idea. Let's get together a pitch and we'll send it to her. And so we did. And the editor said, yeah, like that's actually something I'm interested in. And I'm like, oh, oh, shoot. Now I have to write.
Now I got to write it.
No, I got to write it, you know. And that one, gosh, yeah, that was a lot of work. So it was, again, one of those things where I just started. I knew what angle I wanted to approach. So it's about how animals and plants survive wildfires. Everything you hear in the news is the devastation and the destruction of people and homes and all that stuff. And I never want to downplay the seriousness of that. But it's very easy to just get a one-sided picture of fires are bad. Fires are destructive. When fires can be and are very good. Caveat that with mega fires versus a lesser intensity wildfire. And so again, I kind of knew as I did my surface level research, I kind of was able to plot out and figure out like the different ways that fire affects landscapes and animals and all that kind of things and things I wanted to cover. And then I reached out to a couple of friends who had done the middle grade nonfiction market before. So Nora Nickum was one and Mary Boone was another. And I said, okay, guys, like, this is my idea. How do I do this? You know, like, I had, again, watched a webinar about proposals. But it's hard to really understand what to do until you start doing it and you start putting your proposal together mm-hmm. yourself. And so, yeah, like, I, with their help, was able to write the proposal. And I asked my editor, I said, how much do you want? You know, do you want one chapter, three chapters? And she said, well, let's start with one. And again, I feel very fortunate because I think it was a topic she was really interested in. And so she said, let's start with one, get the proposal done, get all that done, send it to me when it's ready, and we'll go from there. And if we need to, you know, make some changes or we need to expand to three to be able to get it through acquisitions, we'll work on it. Again, I was very, very lucky. So, yeah, I mean, and I still had to go through the whole process of having my critique partners, like, you know, reading the sample chapters and reading the proposal and giving me feedback. You know, I didn't just blast it off to her. I still took my time and all that kind of stuff and had to plead my case of where it would fit in the market and comp titles and all that. And so, yeah, I mean, I sold that one in March of 2022 and it'll come out June of 24. So that was another one where it sold and I was like, oh, okay, well, crap, now I have to write the whole thing. And find photographs to go inside of it.
So you said that a couple of different times, like the notion of, oh crap, now I got to write it. To me, that's such a dream scenario. Like I would love to know that somebody found an idea of mine imminently publishable in a way that they wanted to say, yes, even though you haven't written this yet fully, I would love to write that. Like or I would love for you to write that. I guess that gets to something that we've talked about before. Are you internally motivated, externally motivated? Like, how do you see that? Because I would find that very energizing.
It was. And again, like, very, very grateful. I think it was more the risk of moving outside my comfort zone, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily mm-hmm. that I didn't want to write it. It's just I had kind of found comfort in my groove in picture books. And so then making the leap felt scary, you know, and I was like, oh man, this is going to be a lot more work. And so it wasn't so much that I didn't want to, it was more of like, oh, now I really, like, you're forced to, which again is a good thing. And I'm grateful and I'm really proud of the work that I did. I think it was more just taking that leap of doing it, you know, versus staying. And I actually wrote a picture book in between and my agent called me out on it. And she said, you're not working on your middle grade. I said, you're right. You're right.
You're like, sorry, I'm trying to make you a little bit more money.
Yeah.
That's really funny, though, because I find when I'm working on longer stuff, it, depending on, you know, what my day looks like and how much time I've got, like, I don't always have enough time to get into it. Like, if I'm working through edits or whatever, like, it takes me a minute to sort of, like, find the voice, figure out where I am, like, what am I doing, and, like, sort of remind myself, like, oh, right, this is what I'm looking for, and, like, I need to fix this thing or whatever. So if I don't have that kind of time, I will work on something shorter. So I tend to bounce around a lot. It's for that reason, and because, like, you know, writer's block or whatever, or I'm, like, sick of whatever it is I'm working on, and I'm just like, I need a break from you, like, let me go do this thing. So, like, is that something that you do also?
Yeah. Oh, I might be procrastinating on another middle grade right now. Nothing sold, just a new idea that I'm working on. And I think it's also the bright, shiny object of, you know, ooh, here's a new idea. And you're like, oh, I can just set this one down for a minute. And, you know, again, just because of my process and researching and all that, you know, some take a long time. You know, some of them I can end up writing pretty quickly. And so it was one of those cases where I don't think I took too much time away from the middle grade, but I took enough time away where she's like, I don't want to see this right now. You're supposed to be working on something else. But we were also, you know, and then adding to that, after that middle grade had sold, we found out that's when we were moving to Japan. And so then I had a different, you know, Josh, you were talking about the motivator. Now I had an external motivator because now I knew my time was going to be limited and I knew there was going to be an interruption to my schedule and my routine. And so then I kind of had to force myself to go back and research and write. I think I wrote a couple more chapters and then I took a break for the move. And then as soon as I got, I think our house was unpacked. I unpacked it like a crazy person in like a week. And then I just locked myself back in the house. Kids went to school, husband went to work. And I was like, okay, I've got to finish this middle grade because now I have a deadline, you know? So it's fun though. I mean, it's a different challenge. It's fun.
I don't want to breeze past the fact that you moved to Japan. That feels significant.
We also have that in common, Josh. We both lived in Okinawa. So gosh, if you want to go down that route, we can.
So that, I assume, had to do with you know, your husband's relocation and was temporary since you're back in the States now. Yeah, okay.
Yep. Yeah. It was a really neat experience. And I wasn't working while we were in Japan just because it's kind of tough to, you know, A, get a job, and B, get a good paying job. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, writing is my full-time job for as long as we live here. And again, it gave me the time to finish the middle grade and, you know, was able to get out and do a lot of exploring on the island. And then, you know, I guess explore a lot of other ideas that I had been interested in pursuing. Like I mentioned, the ant, you know, ant topic, the ant book that will never be, you know, so I was grateful, for that experience. It's just, I had a little more time to be able to research and kind of test out some of the other ideas that I had put on the back burner for years. And
Do you ever write fiction, Jess, or is it just nonfiction? Like, is that what you're mostly interested in?
Yeah, so I have attempted fiction. I have one that I think it went out to a very small round of editors, and then I ended up selling something else, and so we just kind of paused, you know, submitting anything else for the rest of the year. So I have. I think I've just kind of gotten into the groove of nonfiction, that it comes easier to me than fiction does. I think maybe need to tell myself that the fiction story I'm writing is a real story, and then maybe I'll believe it enough to, like, put it down. But I think making stuff up is a little harder for me, you know, than getting creative with the nonfiction topics.
Very unrelatable, yeah. As far as I'm concerned.
I know, right?
I want to live in the real world.
What you're saying to me. I know, because I'm like, I can't, like, for me to research and do, like, something that is nonfiction, it feels so, like it's so confining, because I'm like, man, like, I can't go anywhere with this. So, like, even the quote-unquote nonfiction that I do have, like, I did research it, and that research was really fun. But in the end, it's infofic. It's not true nonfiction, because, like, it's just, it was more fun for me to be like, oh, these facts are really cool. Okay, let's see what I can do. So, like, I couldn't even get myself to stay in that, like, to stay in my lane, you know, for, like, a minute, because I was like, I can't do it. So...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the cool option about nonfiction, is that you have, you know, you just have to be honest with yourself and the reader to know when it is infofic versus truly nonfiction. Mm-hmm. One of the ones that I'm working on is an infofic. It was based on a true story. You know, it pulls in some factual information, but I was able to go fictional with it for a lot of areas. So I guess, yes, I do fiction. But I mean, the other thing too with nonfiction for me, which I think is fun, is you can play with the structure. And there's so many different ways to kind of present the information. So I think, as far as, you know, it's not the nonfiction that we read as kids. You know, if you go back and you look at the books that were out there years and years ago for nonfiction, like, they're so, he was born in here and this happened. And, you know, it can be very dry and bland. Yeah. Yeah, really. And I think now that there's different ways to present nonfiction, different formats, and you can have fun getting creative with how you present the information to the reader. I like narrative. I still like there to be a story in there. But I have some that don't have stories that just, you know, haven't had a chance to get out there yet. So, I don't know. It's fun.
So can we circle back real quick to when you started querying to get your agent? So because you are mostly nonfiction, did you find it easier or more difficult when you were looking for an agent? Because, you know, it sort of like narrows things down. So it's not like this whole field of agents that are looking for nonfiction. At least that's my impression, because I feel like there are, you know, specific agents that do really well with nonfiction. And there's some that are just like, yeah, I mean, it's all right, but like, it's not my... You know, it's not my thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I was on Query Manager or Query Tracker, whatever it is. And the wish list and all that. And yeah, so definitely finding something. But here's the other thing that I think with querying and these wish lists. I mean, if somebody said strictly, if someone said strictly no nonfiction, then I would know that they're not a good fit. But the fact of the matter is that, like, as much as an agent can say that they are interested in something, they don't know what your story is about, right? So you might read it and think, oh, this is a perfect fit, and you send it off, and it is, you know, and then they reject it. And you're like, well, hey, you said you wanted a story about a mushroom that grew in the desert, or I don't know, something stupid, right? Like, and you can be like, oh, that was a perfect fit. Or you can say, oh, this person, you know, has a good reputation and whatever, and personalize it the best you can and just shoot your shot as far as, because they might not know until they read your story that it's the style of what they're looking for, or what they find appealing in it, you know.
Totally.
So I wouldn't get too hung up on the you know, having to meet the wish list exactly. But it did narrow it down a bit, so
yeah. Right. Well, so let me ask you this, because manuscript wish lists are like, they're so like frustrating in a very specific way, because it's like, I know agents are trying really hard to put across like what they're looking for, right? So you can either not waste your time, or you can be like, oh, you're a perfect fit. Great. However, because writing is so subjective, because humor is so subjective, your voice, everything, it's so subjective. Like, who knows? Like, so often I'm like, this is it. I can feel it. And then it's like, oh, it wasn't right for my list. Other times I send stuff off and I'm like, I mean, this kind of fits, sort of, vaguely, and I get, like, a really nice champagne rejection, and I'm like, what the what? Like, I have no idea. So it's like, I got no idea across the board. Like, I'm just like, you know what I mean? Like, you try really hard, and even when you try your hardest, you think it's gonna work, and it doesn't. It's, like, infuriating, because you're just like, come on, like, and I'm sure for the agent, too. Same thing, because they're trying their best to get it across, and it's just, like, not coming across, because, like, it's so hard to, like, pin down, you know?
Yeah, and I think the same can be true with editors, too. So what happened with my second book, Lights Out, that one will come out in March of 2024. We had pitched...
And we are part of the same debut group. I wanted to shout that out. Yes, we are excited to start, like, debuting and promoting all these books. So look for that one, Lights Out.
Go PB Spreers, So that one was interesting because, as I mentioned, when I sold Carrier Reef, we had been out on submission with a different manuscript. And we had submitted to my editor for my second book. And she had a lovely pass. And my agent will do phone calls with editors to just kind of, I guess, maybe talk to them and figure out, like, what else they're looking for. Or, you know, maybe dive deeper on those wish list type things. And so then my agent called me and she said, well, she really likes your writing. She really likes your style. But this wasn't a fit for the type, you know, for the type of books that they publish. So we kind of brainstormed. I had a different manuscript, and it was originally about flyways. So birds will travel, like, migratory routes, and there's four of them in the U.S., kind of like, they're like just big chunks of, like, sections of the U.S. Like, you've got all the West Coast that the birds will travel up, you know, certain species will travel, like, this flyway and up to Canada and whatever. And so that's kind of what it was more generally. And my agent and I kind of brainstormed, well, what's a different topic? How can we get this more specific and maybe make this more appealing to this editor? And again, there was, you know, no guarantee. But it was nice being able to, you know the editor was interested and know that, you know, I had something to work towards and something, you know, somebody who might want to read my work. I guess just having that vote of confidence, right? That was also a revise and resubmit. That one, all of my books that I've sold have been revise and resubmit. I don't know where I was going with this, but
that's okay. We were talking about manuscript wish lists and just
you don't know, but and also not being too precious, you know, and willing to try again different formats and different stories and that kind of stuff. So
here's what I'm hoping really works out for me. Don't engage in the querying process. Podcast long enough for an agent to just go, look, I like what you're saying, or at least I like the questions that you're asking. I will sell your stuff for you. Just as out of pity. That's what I'm going.
Out of pity. A pity rep.
A pity representation.
You don't want that, Josh. You don't want that.
No.
I don't think that exists.
They'll rep you on proposal. Like, this is what you're proposing. I like your style. Let's try this out.
Okay, so, let's talk about that, though.
Yeah,
this is a dumb tangent, and we can cut this out if it's too dumb. But I love the future in which there is a nonfiction on proposal, but there's also dumb idea on proposal. Like, here's this harebrained scheme that I would love to be able to write. Do you like it enough for me to actually go through the process of writing it? That's my ideal world.
Hey everybody, let's talk real nonfiction here as we take a break in the episode. I promise Brenna and Jessica are going to unpack my weird and goofy idea, but the real nonfiction of it is that I try to take out as little from these conversations as possible, except for pauses. So just imagine me cringing at myself as I float these weird ideas. I did want to do a couple of reviews for books that we like this week. First time this has ever happened in several years of doing this podcast, Brenna and I reviewed the same book. So my review for the week and Brenna's first review for the week is A Wish I Came Up With It Concept, My Cat Looks Like My Dad by Tao Lam, is an adorable book about comparisons, belly rubs, and tiny mustaches. The main character chooses to highlight as similarities just increase in hilarity throughout, and the collage style complements the text very endearingly. You wouldn't expect it with a relatively simple and straightforward book like this one, but it has a stunning twist you won't see coming. Proof that you can do a lot with a little.
And here's Brenna's review for the same book. Brenna's review for the week is My Cat Looks Like My Dad for Tao Lam. What a surprise. Tao has expertly and hilariously highlighted all the ways the family cat looks like dad, from playing with boxes to taking naps. You'll be so delightfully caught up in the illustrations that twist ending will leave you both touched and surprised. Clearly, we were left with very similar impressions for this book. It's just great. Great synergy, to use my corporate term. Brenna's second real review for the week is for Lights Out by Jessica Strimmer. This beautiful book, congratulations, Jessica, this beautiful book paints a perfect picture of how birds find their way, really challenging my sort of spit screen that I have on my microphone here. The way Jessica mirrors the path of the migrating birds, but the children spreading the word about how to help is both clever and kid-friendly. This book will inspire you to do your part to help birds everywhere, and Bonnie Peng's illustrations will dazzle and delight. Congrats on the release, Jessica. And John's review for the week is Buffalo Fluffalo by Emmy-nominated Bess Kalb, with illustrations by Aaron Cron. It's a heartwarming tale that teaches a valuable lesson about self-acceptance. Through clever, creative, and punny rhymes, we meet a buffalo full of bluster and huffalo. You guys are messing with me with these reviews. Who pretends to be a tuffalo, but learns a valuable lesson in learning the importance of just being oneself-alo. Cal's narrative is a joyful romp across the plains of self-discovery, matched perfectly by Cron's bright and colorful illustrations. True to form, John gives this 5 fluffy buffaloes out of 5. For shoutouts this week, I just wanted to acknowledge something that has come up a couple of different times. Molly Ippolito keeps being brought up in these conversations, so I just wanted to give a quick freebie shout-out on behalf of our guests who have utilized your services, Molly. Job well done, because nobody has anything critical whatsoever to say about the professionalism and awesomeness that you bring to the work that you do to help other authors. So congratulations and shout out there. If you want your own shout out, if you've got something nice to say about someone else in the Kidlit community and want to support our podcast at the same time, hit up our link tree to find links to either where you can get a shout out through our Patreon, or just buy a one-off shout out and have your words appear in one of our mouths as we do this recording. Just go and find our link tree at linktree.com/verse show to find all that, and then everything else that we do, including merch, including the Patreon, and including all the past episodes. Thank you all for listening, and please please now enjoy the rest of our conversation with Jessica.
Any agent who's on board for that, I feel like I would want to work with.
Yeah,
like 100%. Exactly. Like if you're listening and that's something that you're into, like let's hang out, let's do that, because
it's,
I have 100 like dumb.
It's the Verse Show goof off
all day
long.
Anyone who's like into that and wants to bounce funny ideas around, yeah.
I think in some ways that could be beneficial, because as a writer, then if you have a lot of ideas, it helps you to pinpoint kind of what to focus on next. But I also think the thing that could be difficult with that is that you're writing a story, and what if they have it in their mind that they want something and what you actually come up with is totally different, you know, like,
that's true.
So I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess that's where being able to brainstorm with your agent, maybe, to find out, or talking to critique partners to see like what they think is more marketable, could be helpful. Yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah. Especially because when you go down that road of like, silly, funny, quirky, whatever. Like, so writing is subjective anyways, but then when you add a humor level, that's another subjective layer. So it gets like whittled down even further, and trying to find, you know, those, that handful of people at the agent level and the publishing level that actually think those things are funny also, that's a hard needle to thread. So no, you're exactly right. Like, I could come up with the idea, but the way I see it playing out may not be the way you see it playing out. And so if we sell that idea, that ridiculous idea on proposal, and they're like, this is not what I thought at all, and it's not funny, like, then what are you doing? So I think you're right. Yeah. If you have somebody to bounce things off of and be like, is this actually funny? Like, what do you think? Because I need to write this thing. Yeah.
Thank you for workshopping my harebrained scheme. Jess.
Yeah, right. That's really what the podcast is all about.
Oh, my gosh.
But you have to be willing to take chances. Sorry, go ahead.
No. You finished, Jess.
Yeah, no, I guess what I was going to say is you have to be willing to take chances, you know. And like I said, there's plenty of nonfiction topics that I'm interested in, or I start researching and it goes nowhere. And you constantly have to be looking for the doors that you can open, right? So whether it's doing, you know, something through SCBWI or different editor agent showcases, or trying things in different formats, swapping with different critique partners, like, you always have to be willing to go outside your comfort zone a little bit and try something different, knock on doors, because you don't know which ones are going to open.
What I was going to say is, let's talk about Lights Out a little bit and the process of that, and just the background of how that came to be, because that is the one that's like coming out that this episode will probably coincide with. So yeah, let's hear all about
it. Yeah. So Lights Out. So as I mentioned, you know, my agent had talked to the editor, and the editor had given me that little boost of confidence to say, you know, I really like her writing style. Like, I'd love to see something else from her. And so then that's when my agent and I kind of brainstormed, and, she was actually the one, like I mentioned, it was, you know, the original manuscript was about flyways and all the different, you know, kind of dangers and things that birds run into while they're when they're migrating, some of them, unfortunately. But the obstacles.
Poor guys.
Obstacles, you know, the poor birds. And my agent lives in Texas, and she said, you know, the big thing right now is this Lights Out movement. And I said, oh, like, what is that? And so, you know, just researching the Lights Out movement and kind of figuring, and I don't know, when I write, I just get the voice in my head of, like, I can hear the story and I can hear the narrator, and that's kind of what I start getting it out as soon as I kind of hear it, and I kind of have an in to the story, I get it out as fast as I can. And so I had written it, and we ended up submitting it to that editor on exclusive, I think, towards the end of the year in 2021. And she responded in December saying, I'd like to do a revise and resubmit on this, but let's just hold off until January. Okay, great. So then I spent, you know, the next how many weeks, like, thinking about this editor letter and what it was going to be like and what kind of changes and what was she going to want. And, you know, it's every editor's different, you know. So we went back and forth between January and March, making some changes, and she really wanted to make sure that she had it as strong as it could be, because, again, I think it was a topic that had piqued her interest, and she kind of had a personal connection to as well, and so she was equally invested in getting it as great as it could be before she took it to her team. And then, of course, then that one sold. That one sold the middle of March, and Fire Escape sold 2 weeks later, and I was just riding this roller coaster of, like, what is just happening to my life? Happening in my writing life. So that was, again, that was a different style of storytelling. It's a lot different than Carrier Reef. The art looks different, you know, in a good way. The story, it's still very much me, but it's its own self, which I think is just so cool to see how different it is. And then, of course, to see what the illustrator brings to the table, and the artwork on this is really neat too. So I'm excited, you know, and just to be able to, it's such a simple thing that kids can do, turning off the lights, or encouraging their parents to do, or writing to businesses to help, you know, turn off the lights, especially in the bigger cities. And the kids, that one has a child main character in it. It's more kid-centered, which, again, I think is nice, because Carrier Reef was just about the ship, and this one, the kids can really see themselves in the book and being active and doing the things to help the birds.
I want to zero in on something that I imagine was maddening at the time as you were waiting to sell Lights Out as a manuscript. It sounded like they said, yes, we'd like a revise and resubmit, but we're not going to give you our comments or our requests or our changes for a month. So you just kind of had to, like, sit on it for a month, like over Christmas, and, you know, wait until January to get the comments.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's when I kept myself busy, right? I had Fire Escape that I was supposed to be writing. I dove in.
Worked out for you.
I dove into, it did. Yeah. I dove into researching that other picture book, which my agent, you know, was like, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. But, you know, so I had other things. I kept myself busy with other things so that I wasn't too hyper-focused, because there really wasn't anything I could do until I got the editor's notes. There was nothing I could do. But it was it is kind of that weird limbo of, you know, something's coming. What's it going to be like?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fun.
Just for our listening audience, do you want to tell everybody what the Lights Out movement is so they know, like, you know, what is coming in the book?
Yeah. So the Lights Out movement, essentially, when birds migrate, the light that's created by, you know, our homes, offices, buildings, things like that can be really disorienting to the birds. They can be attracted to the big cities and they can get off course. And unfortunately, there's a lot of bird strikes with, you know, taller buildings. And so the Lights Out movement is essentially turning off as many outdoor lights as you can during peak migration periods to try and help give the birds the best shot that you can to help them get to where they're going. So, you know, they migrate north in the springtime, south in the winter. So there's different websites, there's different things you can sign up to get alerts to know when the birds are migrating through your area, or just being aware of the seasons and just in general having good practice to turn off any unnecessary outdoor lights. A lot of it is the big businesses and corporations, right? Our homes only produce so much light, but getting the other bigger businesses on board to turn off their lights is really important too.
This means you target Walmart parking lot managers for sure.
Yeah.
Or like if you think in New York, I think they have the 9/11 memorial that usually has lights going, and I think they've even got on board and they'll turn off the lights during certain times so that, you know, because otherwise the birds are attracted to that and they're going to be hitting the buildings. And so the taller towers in Chicago or places like Texas, San Diego, things like that, where, and other big cities, yeah, really getting them on board. And it's cool because it's the U.S. and Canada will work together a lot too, and all the Audubon societies. So the Audubons are like the bird, you know, the big bird people, and they're kind of independent, but I can't remember which one it was, but they all kind of figured out, like, one of them started figuring out the Lights Out movement of turn, you know, like, oh, if we turn off the lights, it helps the birds. And then, you know, through their network, we're able to kind of push this movement wider and really help the birds as they're migrating. And then other things that kids can do as birds are migrating through the area to, you know, make it easier for them as far as food, water, you know, birdhouses, I don't know, different things that, you know, kids can do in their own backyards to make a difference. Because kids want to feel important, right? They want to feel like they have a place and a way to actually help.
In terms of people who make you feel important, Natasha, I want to talk about the ways of working with Natasha. I feel like we've talked about your relationship and how things have developed with her a lot. But there's something I want to zero in on, which is you had mentioned earlier that she tends to be a one sub at a time agent. This is something I know as a standard practice just for client environment maintenance and throughput, and so as not to overwhelm, you know, the increasingly few editors who are receiving their stuff. I'm curious to see how you reflect on how that's worked in practicality as you move forward with having six irons in the fire at once. Like, you're probably breaking the mold to a certain extent, or breaking guidelines a little bit. But just what do you think about that?
I probably get on her nerves sometimes. I mean,
stop selling stuff.
I know. I have That's slowed so down. Annoying. Well, here's the thing, right? And she's wise. You know, she said, I need to slow you down a little bit because you don't need to have all these books out publishing the same year. You know, like, you need to pace yourself. And she's right. Like, I only had Carrier Reef this year. Next year, I'll have two. And so I'm, you know, switching from, you know, still sharing about Carrier Reef, but now I'm going to be talking about Lights Out. I just did the cover reveal for Fire Escape. And so I understand where she's coming from. You know, just because there's edits, there's not only just the marketing and promotion, but there's edits and that kind of stuff that go along. And especially for, you know, Fire Escape was such a big one. Making sure that I wasn't overwhelmed as an author and making sure that I could continue to produce and do the edits and get back on timelines and not feel burnt out and still feel inspired and motivated to continue to create. But also, I don't know. Like I said before, you have to look for doors to open, and sometimes you got to knock on them. Sometimes you got to kick your foot in there a little bit. And I feel very strongly about some of the things that I write and their potential to sell. And so if I see an opportunity, I'll bug her about it, you know. She's very much on the side of building relationships with editors, which I also very much support. Because, again, once you've one of my other books that I can't talk about yet, you know, was another one of those situations where, you know, relationships form and the editor is maybe more willing to make those changes, do those revisions with you because they've worked with you before and they know what you're willing to do and what kind of work you're going to produce. And again, she does, yeah, she has other clients, you know, where then she's submitting to other editors, you know, for her clients. And so she has to manage that list. There's so much that happens behind the scenes, you know, with all that. And of course, as writers, we want our books to be out there front and center all the time. And so sure. It is definitely a balance and understanding the give and take on both sides of it of like, okay, you know, yep, it's okay to take a break from submitting versus, you know, hey, like you said, the iron's hot. Like, I want this one out now to this person now, please. Yeah. Now, yeah. Now, I don't wait. Now, please.
I also wonder if her policy specifically about only having one out at a time is because you mostly write nonfiction. Because I know a lot of agents will say that, and they're like, well, what I mean is one nonfiction, one lyrical, one, you know, rhyming, one hilarious, you know, whatever. So there's sort of a bandwidth. But, you know, you write nonfiction almost exclusively, so you don't want to bombard everybody at once.
Right, yeah. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I sold Lights Out and Fire Escape within 2 weeks of each other. So she was willing to have multiple things out. They were in completely different genres. And
right.
Part of it, too, is circles back to the audience and who's going to be buying your books. And, you know, are all your supporters going to be able to buy all your books if you've got four coming out in a year? You know, maybe not. Would right. they buy two? You know, and the people that are going to buy your middle grade might be different than the people that buy your picture books. So I think it is beneficial to totally. Diversify, you know, as an author and be able to write in different genres. And then, yeah, understanding the policy. Because then, of course, when she's submitting to editor, she's submitting to different ones for middle grade versus picture book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, totally. And yep. And actually, so just, I had one more question pop up in my brain as we were talking about that. So your critique group, do they also write mostly nonfiction? Because I imagine having a critique partner who understands, you know, the research and what you're going for and all that kind of stuff is going to be more helpful than someone who only writes fiction, which not to say that they wouldn't be because, you know, structure and all that stuff and whatever. But yeah, so are they mostly nonfiction?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. And then I'll branch out every once in a while if I, you know, my critique group has kind of seen things and I need totally fresh eyes, you know, and I'll say it's okay. Mm-hmm. If you don't, and again, some of my stuff, upcoming stuff is more infofic. So it's okay. Like I still want your perspective. You know, because mm-hmm. even if you don't write nonfiction, I would hope that you also check out nonfiction for your kids. So what is your perspective? You know, and it's nice to get a fresh totally. Set of fresh eyes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and also just real quick, I looked up Katie's last name because I didn't want to mess up her last name. It's Katie Vinette.
So is that how you pronounce it?
On Discord. Yes. Well, that's my guess. That's how it's written. Katie, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. But shout out to you because we had a great time at dinner with you. And I didn't want to gloss over her. and also asking, you know, for other fresh eyes made me think of Discord because I've seen on there, you know, oftentimes there's a nonfiction channel and people will be like, hey, like, could you please look at this? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if it's coming across, whatever. And that, you know, that's always super helpful, especially if it's somebody who actually writes nonfiction that, you know, and for myself coming from a place where I don't generally write nonfiction, it's really helpful to have those eyes on stuff and then vice versa. So anyways, yeah.
Yeah. And I tend to read more nonfiction picture books just to stay in the loop of, you know, what's being published. And so I like to be able to go on there and, you know, see what other people are doing. Yeah. And what other books they're recommending.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. It's good to have a finger on, like, what's going on, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're about to do. I have one more question I want to talk about. So before, Brenna, before you hopped on, one of the rarest of instances where I actually jumped on in time and we were doing a little chatting about just about your website and working with Molly. I mean, I want to talk about that, that sort of like not doing everything yourself, getting a bit of sort of professional assistance. I wonder where that came from your perspective in engaging with Molly to help with, you know, the website and educational materials and all that. What was that thought process like?
Yeah, I mean, I had done my own website for a while, but I knew it needed to kind of be elevated. And so I can't remember. Molly and I had swapped when I very, very, very beginning started writing. Molly and I had swapped. And so we're friends on Facebook and, you know, friends on Twitter and kind of stayed in contact. And I think a few other people had used her. And so I just reached out to, you know, kind of see. I said, this is kind of what I'm thinking. Like, is this something you can do? And she's lovely. You know, like when Fire Escape, when the cover, you know, came out, I emailed her and I said, okay, like, can you help me? You know, because you put together this great website. I don't know how to update it, you know, and I'm happy to pay for her services because it saves me time and headache of trying to figure it all out. Sure. And it looks so much better. So, yeah, I think it's Molly Ippolito is how you say her last name. Does anybody need
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah.
Anybody needing website or graphics or any of that kind of stuff, she's fantastic.
Have you worked with her?
Yeah, we can link her in the show.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, have you worked with her on educational materials and things as well, like supplemental stuff for the books?
Not yet. You just reminded me that's on my to-do list. I need to. yeah, because I do, I want to have that available on my website for teachers, you know, that end up there to be able to, I think too, with nonfiction, it's important to show how it can tie back into the classroom, you know, and how teachers can use it because the library school market is such a big one. And so, yeah, I thank you for that reminder, Josh. I need to ask her about making a teacher's guide.
Once again, this will be long in your,
for lights out.
Long in your rearview mirror by the time it comes out. Last follow-up question that's related to the sort of pantheon, the Jessica pantheon that's going to be coming out in the next couple of years. It's like, is that part of your, and Natasha's queer, contract negotiation process, the expectation that some of it'll be on you for certain books, some of it'll be on the publisher, depending on the goals of the book in particular?
As far as what, marketing or promotion? Sorry, I don't understand.
So as far as the sorts of like Molly Ippolito stuff, the educational materials, like guides and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question because I think as authors, we see on social media what all these other people are doing, right? And we think, oh, we should be doing school visits. We should be doing this. We should be doing that. And really, I talked to one of my editors about this and she said, what we've all heard is that authors can only move the needle so much, right? So do what appeals to you, do what interests you, do what you enjoy doing. But at the end of the day, we still need to be writing more books. And so, you know, by hiring Molly to be able to do my website freed me up to be able to continue writing more books. By, you know, being selective with what type of marketing and outreach I do frees me up to be able to continue writing, right? They say backlist, sell frontlist. So, you know, I'm a brand new author. I only have one out there. But the more I continue to write, the more I continue to sell. Hopefully, the more my name gets known and those sales continue to go because, you know, of the backlist and everything like that. So, and every editor is different, you know. So far, I'm working with Holiday House and Simon & Schuster. And I haven't really gotten into the marketing promotion of what Simon & Schuster will be. But it seems like they both kind of give you a marketing plan of the things that they're going to do. And you have really, I have no idea exactly all that goes into. You know, they kind of tell you some of the stuff that marketing and everything. But they work pretty hard to get your books out there, to get the reviews. They know the markets that they're trying to reach. You know, that was part of what the editor needed to know when she bought it. And so I trust that those teams are doing what they're doing. I have the website as a landing page for, you know, anybody that wants to find out more about the book. But really, I try to focus on writing the next thing, you know, because the goalpost is always moving. My goals are always moving. I want to be able to get the next book sold and continue to have that backlog of books out there.
Yeah. The conclusion that I'm coming to is that you should work on your own educational materials and your website so that you slow down a little bit.
yeah, right. Well, Natasha's like, please work on something. Something else. Give me a minute.
After this summer, I got the phone call this summer. So the call I got this summer was funny because I was at the pool with my daughters and all of a sudden my watch starts buzzing and I like leapt, you know, we were in one of those like lazy rivers and my daughter's like, where are you going? I'm like, Natasha's calling. I got to get out of the pool. And she's like, Mom, just relax. You can call her back. I'm like, I'm not calling her back. I got to get out of here. And I'm like paddling as fast as I can to the side of the pool, answering the phone call. And then, so then, yeah, we had that talk, and she goes, okay, so now on to another middle grade. Remember that other middle grade you said you were going to write, remember? And I'm like, okay, yeah, we're back here again. So
remember.
You know, okay, Jess, you're back. Yeah, let's add another. So she's good about trying to, you know, keep me on track and balance what I'm bringing in through the pipeline, too. Yeah.
So you got to limit your pool time. Yeah. Exactly.
The one that I continue to procrastinate. I've done the research on it. In my defense, I've done the research on this, and I've started the proposal, and I've started the outline. I just, like you were saying, Brenna, it takes a minute to kind of get into the headspace, and so I kind of need that dedicated time to really sit down and, you know, write down the first couple chapters. So I'll get there.
Yeah, totally. No, yeah.
And I may or may not be also, like, researching and writing, you know, the next picture book while I'm procrastinating, but don't tell Natasha.
Again, irons in the fire.
There is nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I support this sort of strategy.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, thank you so much for coming on. Like, you've been so generous with your time. Like, we're already over an hour. I really appreciate you coming on and just chatting to us about all things publishing and writing and all of it. And I'm so excited for Lights Out to come out. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, thank you. It's beautiful. It's a great book. I'm excited for kids to get their hands on it.
Thanks for listening this week.
Find all of our episodes and other associated links and information at linktree.com/verseshow.
Or reach out to us on Twitter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next verse.
Bye.